formed, drawn up from the water, and they form a little cloud. And because it's a low pressure area there, the rushing air rushing in from all around it moves it up and forms a little mushroom. It does form a little mushroom cloud, just like the thing off Japan. And so, you know, the basic mechanism we're talking about has been done in the laboratory.
Well, I guess it's a question as to whether that would scale up in a proportional...
The mechanism itself is not scale-dependent at all. You know, it's the basic physical mechanism. It's the use of the beams to produce a certain kind of energy production or energy extraction. That has nothing to do with scale.
What about the energy requirements for the initial production of a scalar energy in the Soviet Union?
Since I don't know how much they produce, you know, I don't know what the energy requirements would be or exactly what kind of things they're using for energy. Now, there are papers from the Soviet Union which show that they certainly have used entire power systems and entire power plants to drive a transmitter. And they've reported, even with conventional transmitters, enormous currents and enormous voltages and penetrating through the entire crust of the Earth.
Mm-hmm. I guess then you haven't done any, made any kind of ballpark estimate of what they're actually doing, what they're putting into this in terms of their energy system.
No, that would be difficult to do without knowing, number one, how many they have, number two, having a better system of measurement. Here in the West, in this whole area, we're still very primitive. Even the few people who are doing some work in the scalar electromagnetics, it's still very primitive. We're back where the ordinary electromagnetics was when they were rubbing glass rods with cat fur. So we've got a lot of work to do. One of the reasons for going into this area is because, number one, it is a threat to us. Number two, the only way we're ever going to catch up is we've got to get all the universities turned on.
And that's what we're all about here, is to turn on the universities, turn on the genius of the American people. Craig, that brings us to the end of hour two of Open Mind tonight. Thank you very much for the
question.
Can I
hold on?
Yeah, you want to hold on?
Okay.
We're going to take a break.
Thank you.
We're talking to Tom Bearden tonight on Open Mind, and we're talking about something that needs your attention, the weather war. Come on in. We have another hour to go. Welcome to Hour 3 tonight of Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and I hope you are as spellbound as I have been. Through the course of this evening, our guest speaking to us on our conference line from Huntsville, Alabama, a member of the Association of Distinguished American Sciences, Mr. Thomas E. Bearden. And we are talking about what appears to be, perhaps, an undeclared weather war that is being waged against us. We've heard some of the science, we've seen the signatures of the science, we've seen what they have been doing to us. Tom, you mentioned a little while ago that there was a tape, a videotape, in which you had explained a lot of this and where people themselves can see the photographs. Many of those photographs in your tape will be printed in Let's Talk magazine in the upcoming article about the weather war that I will have in there. Is that tape available to the general public?
Yes, it is. And let me talk about that just a moment. This is a one-hour tape. It's available in either VHS or Beta. It's $40 postpaid. And we'll send it right out. I'll give the address, and I'll tell you what's in the tape. The address is Post Office Box 1472, Huntsville, Alabama, 35807. Post Office Box 1472, Huntsville, Alabama, 35807. Now, the first part of the tape goes briefly through the actual physics involved, the Kaluza-Klein geometry that's involved. And I show with some analogies exactly how you can turn the electromagnetic energy into gravitational field energy and vice versa. Then, using the scalar beams, we show you how that can be intersected over the U.S. and then show pictures of some of the giant radials that we've seen and photographed. And we show pictures of the exhausts on Bennett Island taken by U.S. weather satellites. We show some three or so of those. We show a picture of one of the exhausts on Novaya Zemlya that's also going on in the Soviet Union. And so we go into some other anomalous phenomena that are connected with that grid, such as mysterious failures of engines and airliners and so forth, and such as mysterious power failures in San Diego connected with chaff drops. And we give you the mechanisms by which all of that occurs. And so the tape itself is a rather complete explanation of exactly how the Soviet Union is doing weather warfare, at least as far as our understanding of it is at the present time.
Well, it's a riveting tape. I certainly value my copy.
Well, one of the things we want to add to the tape as soon as we can, as soon as we can get some more studio time, is we want to add on, since we've gotten Bill's permission, a little bitty trailer showing the pictures that he took of the grid up in the sky there in Los Angeles.
Well, you're certainly welcome to put it in there. And I'm delighted that you feel that strongly about them, that you'd want to include that in a rather scientific thing.
Well, you see, one of the things we want to do is urge everybody out there who sees these patterns to please try to get a photograph and contact either Bill Jenkins or myself and let us know what you've got and what it looks like and where it was, because then we can connect that to the actual weather changes that are occurring. We can associate them and see if they correlate.
So we look for this hub and spoke, or this rising sun effect laying horizontal in the sky. This crosshatch, perfect squares being formed in the cloud formations. When you see anything like that, clouds streaming into a central point as if they're all vectoring into one point in the crosshatch formation, snap a picture. If you have a videotape machine, take tape, send it to me when you get it, or to Tom.
And make sure you write down the date, the time, you know, the weather conditions, all the things like that. Exactly what it is that you're seeing when you see that.
Because it is a very important piece of a puzzlement, right?
And by the way, if the listener doesn't have a camera when he sees one of these, and I've had that experience, whip out a piece of paper and make as good a sketch as you can. That's also very worthwhile because it does show what you're seeing at that particular time and where it is.
All right, let's go to our callers now. I think we have Rex standing by. Rex, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. One of the first questions I'd like to ask Tom is last time he was on the program, he told us that there wasn't a whole lot of awareness with the Defense Department on this. What I'd like to ask is, has this brought up quite a bit more awareness? And if it has, what does the government plan on doing for countermeasuring these?
Oh, boy. Of course, you understand I can't speak for the government at all.
I'm in the military, too, but yeah. I can understand, you know, what you can put out in public and what you can't.
Okay. Since you've dealt with the bureaucracy that we all have to deal with, and I'm not saying that necessarily in a derogatory sense. That's the nature of any large organization.
Mm-hmm.
Since we have such a bureaucracy that we have to deal with, you understand that the only way to get anything done anymore is you have to bypass all the stuff going up the middle. And you have to come in at a fairly high level before you can find anybody who's got power enough to do anything. Otherwise, it just stays buried up in committees, and people who don't believe anything new will ever come along anyway. So what you have to do is generate some way to climb the ladder around where all the blocks are. And so one of the ways you do that is with a series of articles that do not get censored, that do go ahead and carry out the stuff that's in the open literature and can be seen in the sky and photographed. And you put all that together and you simply put it out there so that anybody can read it. After a while, people begin to pick it up. Of course, judiciously, inside the whole bureaucracy, there's always a hidden organization in any organization. And so what happens is people start to circulate the material and say, here, what do you think of this? And gradually, the material works its way up to a higher level. Well, now, those fellows have access to a lot more sensitive information than I do. And so if there's some validity in what we're saying, they're going to be comparing it to a much wider range of information than anything I've looked at. And so at some point, if there's some substance to it, they're going to start to get interested. And that's one way of sort of seeding the system and say, hey, guys, you know, go look in this area and see what you find. You sort of stimulate them which way to go, and they go look. And
right.
Many times when they do that, they find something they have been overlooking. Now, this particular case, the scalar electromagnetics and the weapons from that, is very difficult. The reason is, suppose you worked, for example, in an intelligence agency, and you're responsible for spending American taxpayers' money. You're not going to spend that on just everything that comes down the pipe on any kind of wild idea comes along. You're going to look at that very carefully. Okay, here comes an idea you've never heard of before in your life. So where do you turn to see if there's any substance to that? You turn to the orthodox scientific community. And what are they going to tell you? They're going to tell you, we've never heard of anything like that. It's not in our textbooks. That's the problem. And those guys do very well, do very good at the things they know or the things that our scientists know about. The problem in this area has been it deals with an area that we don't know about and our scientists don't. And that's why it's been necessary to go open with this stuff and to write papers and put out all the incidents that I can gather and collate together, and why I've been doing this sort of thing for really quite a few years indeed.
Tom, do you know enough about it to where if the government just happened to give you an open way to do something, what would you suggest we do on something like this? What would be your plan of action?
Well, there are certain people in the United States, a few of them, who are already working in elementary scalar technology. For example, it is possible to build a free energy device, and several of them have been built. The Bedini device, Jim Watson has built several devices, and there are several other inventors right now who have working model free energy devices and are hidden down the road trying to get to market. The good Lord willing, we're going to see one or more of those devices on the market, hopefully, in less than a year. The other thing that should be done for countermeasures, the Soviet Union is their leaders are not fools, nor are they crazy. They are not insane, and they simply won't blow up the world. So what we need to do is counter and check and build defenses in the area. They're counters to these weapons just like they're counters to any weapon. Once we do that, it is possible to get an agreement with the Russians in this area. I believe it is possible. And the reason I believe that is they tried to get an agreement with us in it in the first place in 1975. For example, in 1975... Brezhnev made a major speech to the leaders of the Communist Party and the leaders of the Soviet Union, pointing out that they needed one other kind of agreement that they did not have, and it was to ban the development of new weapons far more frightful than the nuclear weapons and missiles and so forth. Very shortly thereafter, he pounded all over a group of visiting senators with the same message. We've got to negotiate this additional agreement. We've got to do it. Shortly thereafter, Pomeroy, the secretary of the party, dumped all over a bunch of visiting congressmen. The same message. We must negotiate this other agreement. Then shortly thereafter, Gromyko actually carried a draft agreement to the United Nations and introduced it and urged the nations of the world to sign it. And Article 1 of that agreement essentially stated that, hey guys, once we start negotiating, we'll negotiate the kind of weapons we're talking about. We were so locked in on nukes and bombers and submarines and missiles and so forth that we simply did not know what the Soviet Union was talking about at all. And I think in 1975 we missed an opportunity to get an agreement to ban the kinds of weapons we're talking about. And I think such an agreement can still be gotten once we develop defenses and once, it's negotiating from equals.
I have two very short follow-up questions, Tom. One of them is a friend of mine and myself, we work with a machine which picks up satellite pictures, weather pictures. Is there any way that I can see a difference in what it's doing to the weather as far as what it's showing out on our printout?
Well, I went through a whole exercise and spent quite a little chunk of my change trying to take some of the satellite photos from the stationary satellites out there on a given area at a given day when I knew that giant radios had been sighted. In fact, I'd seen them. And so we zeroed in on the exact times, the coverage during the time when those radios were in the sky. The problem was those long-distance satellites were sitting out there about 22,000 miles or so. And believe it or not, from that picture, you can see across the whole United States and you can get the nice flow of the clouds and all that. But you can't see a 15-mile phenomenon. You can't pick it out of the ordinary clouds. We even blew that thing up as big as we could get them to blow it up. We had them do it and paid to do it. And we still couldn't pick out the radios on the cloud, even though we'd seen them from the ground. And, multiple witnesses, everything else. So it proved to be impossible to get them from that series of photos, even though we tried very hard. Now, if someone happens to have some lower level shots on the same day, I don't know of any right over the U.S. Our weather satellites, however, do circle the globe, I believe, twice a day is what they're doing. The two of them are still up there. If we could get something down lower where a 20-mile cloud pattern would show clearly, that would be very useful indeed, because then we could get a good satellite photo of one of these giant radios, and that's what we need.
Tom, what would happen if we produced the same beams that they're sending over here and cross them with theirs. What would that produce?
Everywhere they cross, you'll get the interference pattern, and depending on the relationship of the potentials, you can either get extraction of energy or you can get production of energy. In other words, what you're suggesting is very interesting. One of the things you could do, and I'll give you this one, this is a counter to the weapon. One of the things you could do is if you actually could have the instrumentation and measured all the stuff they had on there scalar-wise so that you could rig the same signals, you could produce the same signals on the same kind of carrier, put it right back on them, so that it interferes in the energy dump mode. In other words, all of a sudden they would be getting energy back in their transmitters, and boom, off goes the transmitter. It'd be possible to actually sit here and blow out their transmitters by doing that. So that would be one kind of counter you could do, and in other words, teach them a lesson. Say, look, fellas, we don't want this stuff messing up our weather, or else we'd be able to do something to you the same way. If you could do that, then what you would see very shortly is they would quit messing up the weather over our heads. Right now, there's no such counter at all going on. They're not losing their transmitters, and so they don't have to worry about that effect. They can do what they will because we don't have such a device. I will point out to you that the ham radio operators who suffered for a long time because of the woodpecker signals interfering with our communications once got together and all recorded the woodpecker. And then they all turned their tape recorders on and their transmitters on and beamed that thing right back at the Soviet Union. And very rapidly, the woodpecker signals all began to change frequency. Boy, they got out of there. So, yeah, they're sensitive to it, and yeah, you can count it from here. There are weapons, there are counters to any kind of a weapon, including this stuff.
Does that help you, Rex?
Yes, it does. I would like to ask Tom if he has a newsletter that we can get follow-up information about this.
Well, at the present time, I don't. I publish articles usually dealing with energy in the newsletter from the American Association of Gravity Field Energy. And it's the same place here, Huntsville, Alabama. The P.O. box for it is 7004. It has a little newsletter that carries quite a few of my articles dealing with energy, which I discuss the physics of this stuff.
Other than that,
it's the Bill Jenkins Show, and it's also a whole series of papers that I've written that are published by the Tesla Book Company right there in Millbrae, California. Their zip is
94030.
94030, and their street address is 1580 Magnolia. They have a whole series of publications dealing with these particular weapons and so forth. And I have some others ready to be published, almost ready, that I just haven't finished yet.
Thank you very much, Tom.
All right, Rex, thank you for the good questions. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me tonight, Thomas E. Bearden is set. And if you'd like to go, I wish you'd send me just a card with your name, address, and just say London trip on it. And we'll get that off to Chucky Travel, part of the KABC Travel Club. They'll send you all of the information about it. We're going to spend the last week of October in London. We'll go to Stonehenge. We'll go to a number of the castles that have spirit manifestations there. We'll have banquets in some of the great castle halls, in fact. We'll spend Halloween night on the Royal Vessel Barracuda, going up and down the Thames underneath London Bridge in the Tower of London. And we'll go to Bath and see the great baths there. It's going to be quite a fun time. And if you'd like to go, we'd like to have all of you go with us that possibly can. Just send your name and address to me here at KABC, say London trip, and the Travel Club will be contacting you as to what all of that is all about. And we'll have a good time. All right, let's get on with the weather war questions. Maurice, you're on with us.
Yes, I'd like to ask Tom if these scalar beams are traceable. Can we trace them back to their source exactly?
Well, with the proper equipment, they're traceable. The problem is that normal detectors do not see the scalar beams at all. The reason is they don't move electrons in their normal fashion. So most all of our detectors and detector systems are based on eventually on moving electrons. And this doesn't move electrons. This thing moves the protons and the neutrons. It shakes them. But it doesn't actually move conduction electrons down a wire or something like that. And so the normal instruments do not see the scalar waves at all. But it's possible, of course, to build instruments that do. And several people have built such instruments. For example, the one I was referring to a moment ago was some very special instrumentation that Frank Golden has worked out. That's a fairly expensive thing. The instrument's about $14,000 or $15,000.
But he can put the signals and the spectrum and everything else right there on the oscilloscope. It's a very beautiful instrument. The measurements are done inside a Faraday cage. So instruments can be developed, and you can measure the things. But right now, the Orthodox scientific community does not have the instruments and is not measuring what's coming out of the Soviet Union scale-wise.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know, and it seems like that would be a thing to work on. Thank you very much.
All right, Maurice, appreciate that call. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Tom Bearden. I'm Bill Jenkins. Open Mind is the name of this program, and with me is Thomas E. Bearden. We're talking about the weather war, and we have Hugh on the line. Hugh, welcome aboard.
Hello, Bill. Tom, I have a question for you that goes back to 1974. In February of 1974, there was one of our satellites picked up a tremendous amount of radioactivity and electromagnetic disturbances in the area of the Kola Peninsula in the Soviet Union. Did that have anything to do with this?
Hugh, I'm sorry, I simply don't know. I have not picked that up, nor have I investigated it.
Okay. This whole thing occurred in February, and there was a British trawler by the name of Gaul that disappeared at that time. And there's been speculation that it had something to do with particle beam experimentation or possibly weather modification.
Well, they certainly have done particle beam experiments, for example. And they certainly, in my opinion, have done weather modification. We will admit, even the Orthodox people will admit, they've done an awful lot of weather modification experiments with conventional stuff. You know, everything from rockets fired up to try to knock the hail out of clouds and protect the crops to seeding with dry ice and all kinds of things. That's an interesting thing because the Russians report that they've achieved far better than 90% control of hail, and certainly we've never been able to do anything like that with the kinds of things we know about.
Right. Okay, follow-on question then.
By the way, if you have a clipping or anything, or could Xerox a copy of any of the material you have on that February 54
I have pounds of it. No, I've been working on this this Gaul thing for about 5 years now.
Yeah.
And it's an intriguing situation.
Hey, it's a piece of the puzzle. One of make some copies and send it along to either me or to Tom, and I'll make sure Tom gets them.
Okay, if someone could give me the address, Bill, I sure will, but I have a follow-on question, if I may.
All right.
A lot of speculation, Tom, on El Nino and the possibility that El Nino is a result of weather modification efforts or is being used in weather modification efforts by the Soviets. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I do. I can give you an opinion. I understand I'm going to accent the word opinion because, again, I've not had time to really do this one justice. I do know that the El Nino that occurred during a particular time we're talking about here, 82-83 time frame, was very anomalous indeed. It was early. It was far more drastic than we normally have. It caused weather upsets widespread throughout the Earth. There was the heaviest rain and flood in some 50 years or so, or half a century in Ecuador, North Peru, and so forth. There was very heavy rain in California, states like Louisiana, down in Cuba, and yet there was crippling drought in other areas. It really upset the weather patterns around the Earth. And the actual effects that it caused is quite well documented in the ordinary literature. Now, from a scalar viewpoint, what you may have had, and I say may have had because I don't know it was involved in this, what you may have had was a little bit of urging and a little bit of additional energy, warming that, done by the Soviet Union to urge that thing along and make it anomalous. They certainly have the capability of doing that. I'm not saying that I can prove they did it. I just say they have the capability and may have done so. It was a very anomalous El Nino indeed that did cause a lot of damage.
Well, I was back in Kansas during that time frame, and some of the most horrendous rainstorms in the spring, followed by tremendous droughts in the summer, and then most bitter cold weather in the history of the area in the wintertime, and it all sort of tied in with this weird activity of El Nino.
Well, see, it's exactly the kind of thing the Soviets would do in experimenting.
Right.
The way their mind works is they look at an area, they pick out all the major variables, and they say, okay, let's find out what happens if we make a little delta or a little change here in this variable.
And certainly everybody knows that the El Nino causes drastic, weather changes in the Earth. So one of the things they would want to know, just how much additional change do we get if we goose El Nino a little bit.
Right.
And certainly they have the capability. At this point, I really can't say they did or didn't.
Okay. Bill, if you'll have somebody come on, I'll get your address and send you that material on Gaul and what happened in the Kola Peninsula.
I certainly appreciate it.
Okay.
It's very easy, just 3321 South La Cienega Boulevard.
La Cienega.
Right, 90016.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much. You're listening to Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins, and it's Thomas E. Bearden's night, and we'll be back to Tom just...
Hi, Bill, Mr. Bearden.
How you doing?
Pretty good. While in Florida rather recently, towards the end of May, I was on a vacation down there, and I believe it was around over Sarasota. I wish I could be more certain, but you were talking about those spoke-shaped clouds with the...
Yes.
And it was, I believe it was around May, it would have been around May 25th, a large one over the Sarasota area, I believe it was.
Okay.
And, but you were talking, being in that area, I was thinking about what you were saying about this energy drain phenomenon where the two lines meet. And wouldn't that be particularly dangerous significant over the Gulf because of the Gulf Stream? Wouldn't it could possibly cause its cooler weather along the entire length of the Gulf Stream?
Yes, there are other effects that you can do in the weather besides just make highs and make lows. Of course, things like tampering with El Nino or any other normal mechanism that changes weather or affects the weather, tampering with that, of course, would tamper with the weather. So, yes, you could tamper with anything that does induce weather changes and tamper with the weather.
I see. Sort of causing a chain reaction.
Yes.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
But
okay,
you saw the giant radial over Sarasota, Florida? Or...
Yes, I believe it was over Sarasota when I soon after I got there. That would be around...
The 25th?
Somewhere around the end of May, yes, around the 25th maybe of May. I believe it was, yes.
Okay, well, I've written that down, Joe, and I appreciate the information.
Oh, and incidentally, that would be shortly after they had those fires down there. So this would be something after the fact rather than before, but that might be significant.
Right.
It's a piece of the puzzle. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Joe.
Okay.
All right. Edson, you're on.
Good evening, Mr. Jenkins and Colonel Bearden. How are you this evening?
Fine. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, I have several questions here, but I'll try to keep them short. First, I've done a lot of work and research on Tesla, as I mentioned before. And one of the interesting things is that in the Soviet Union, Tesla was really a hero. Last year, July the 12th, 1984, Radio Moscow on their technical show, to be honest, at my suggestion, ran a tribute to Tesla. And I have tapes, and if you or Mr. or Colonel Bearden would like the tapes, I'll send you a copy.
I appreciate a copy.
Okay. Now, what I want to ask is, when the weather war started, there was a high incidence. I think it was the highest period of sunspot activity. And I'm wondering if there's a relationship between that and the start of the weather warfare against the U.S. Also, if the tachyon effect or whatever connected with the scalar waves. And have you heard of a book, Space Wars, Space Weapons, Space War, by John W. McVeigh, Stein and Day, 1979? He mentions Tesla's work, and also his contention is that if an alien space attack by alien space creatures was launched against this planet, they would probably use something like you're talking about. And let's see, also I know that you've written on psychotronic warfare, Soviet psychotronic warfare. I know the Soviets are extremely interested in heliobiology, that is the relationship of sunspots and play conditions on the Earth. And since we've had such incidents of strange diseases hitting the civilization lately, I believe Legionnaire's disease, you wrote about that a few years ago, and the relationship between that and psychotronic warfare. And one final question, not taking up too much time. On the radio clouds, interestingly enough, there was a report about 3 or 4 years ago that terrible symbol of horror and terror in the modern world, the Fleifat, the swastika. There's some contention by two research scientists that that was caused by clouds being bent by the Earth's magnetic field in certain anomalous areas. There's magnetic field forces that don't always jive in certain parts of the world, and previous society saw this and they attributed it to the gods. So, those are my questions.
Well, you've done a lot of homework.
Thank you.
Oh, boy, let's see, where do we start? Well, indeed, in the Soviet Union, Tesla is well known.